This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporter with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Aruba Tourism Authority, NY World Class Market, New England Regional Council of Carpenters, Cameron Aruba All-Inclusive Resort, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, JetBlue, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, Brennan Smoke Shop, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, it's not often during the baseball season you get two nights off in a row. In fact, it's rare. The only time you really get it is during the All-Star break or because of a rainout, but that's what the Red Sox have right now. And the reason they have it? Because they are playing the New York Yankees in a pair of games in London. That's right, in London, starting tomorrow. In fact, the day game tomorrow at 1 o'clock and then 10 a.m. on Sunday morning. Tomorrow night's game, or let me back up here for a second. Tomorrow's game's at 1 o'clock local. It's a night game in London for obvious reasons. Sunday is a late afternoon game, but that means it's on here at 10 a.m. So you will have baseball to watch during the day, tomorrow and Sunday, two day games in a row, one of which is in the morning. Extreme rarity in the major leagues in this day and age. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. I want to start with a big picture question, and then we will get to Alex Cora's press conference. I'm still chuckling about it. In London, if you haven't heard some of this stuff, you're going to want to hear it. Believe me when I tell you. You're going to want to hear it. If for no other reason than Murray does an impersonation of a Brit that is nails. He actually sounds more like a Brit than the Brits do. My gosh.
Well, thank you, Maz.
Absolutely perfect. Wait till you hear the questions that they are tossing at Alex Cora overseas. Holy smokes. If you had a negative opinion of this trip to London before tonight or today, wait until you hear the questions that Alex Cora is getting over in London. Wow, what a waste of time this trip to London is. What a waste of time. That said, I have a big picture question as it pertains to the Red Sox. And I do want to hear from fans because I'm curious as to how people look at this collection of Red Sox players, this era. And that's what it is. It's an era. It's the Mookie Betts era or the Xander Bogaerts era, the Chris Sale era, call it what you want, David Price, this group. How do we look at them? How do we look at them? If it were to end right now, how do we look at this group of Red Sox players? Do you look at them as maybe the authors or the architects the members of the arguably the greatest team in Red Sox history? That team last year that won 108 games and then went 11-3 in the postseason, did not lose more than a single game in any postseason series, whether it be against the Yankees, the Astros, or the Dodgers. They played the three best teams in baseball last year other than themselves, and they wiped them out and won 119 games. So do you look at this group and you say, yeah, I'm going to remember them as the greatest team in Red Sox history? The greatest single team. That's how I'm going to remember them. Or do you look at last year and say, well, that's really the aberration more than the norm? And we went over some of these numbers yesterday. 2 years ago, they won 93 games. I should back up. It's further than that. This is what, Murray? 19? So in 16.
Right.
They won 93 games in 16. They won 93 games in 17. Last year, they won 108. This year, they are on pace for 88 games, 88 wins. So now you know how I think. I believe that consistency really is what separates greatness from anything else. This has been a good team now for 4 years. Last year, they were a great team, but I look at that, and I think last year is the outlier. I think that really this has been a good team that has underachieved a little bit for the four-year period other than the one season. They didn't win a playoff game in 2016. They won one playoff game in 2017. In 2018, they absolutely rolled, but now they've gone backwards again, and they're, if possible, they're worse than they were in either 16 or 17. So I look at last year as the outlier. How do you look at it, Murray?
Yeah, mostly. And I have some numbers here. I gave you some of these yesterday. I don't think you ended up bringing them up on
the website. No, please do. In fact, I meant to do it. So go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, it shows you how they got off to such a torrid start under Cora. So this is looking at in the last couple of seasons in 120 or so game samples. So in 2018, the first 124 games, the Red Sox were 88-36. That's a winning percentage of 710. It's ridiculous. Since then, from counting last year into this year, obviously regular season, 2018, 2019, the next 120 games, they're barely over 500. They're 64-56. And they're also literally 500, 25-25 in one or two run decisions. Like, they're not good in close games. They can mash, but I think the pitching has kind of gone sideways. It especially has in the bullpen. And the bigger picture is that they have kind of underachieved in, if you look at it in, you know, the last five seasons or so. So last year was the anomaly. It was.
Jimmy, am I going too far with my criticisms of the Red Sox?
No, not at all. Please. I wish there were more criticism of the Red Sox.
So is last year the outlier? Is last year the year that really is unusual and the other 3 years are who they are? Or do we look at last year and we say, no, that's who they are. They just hit their ceiling.
2018 was the exception. 108 wins was the exception because the prior 2 years they were 93-93 wins. This year they're on pace for 91, I think.
Lower. 88 last time I checked.
88, so it would be less than that. So they would have underachieved by what I think their norm is, which is a 90-95 win team that goes belly up in the first round.
So I'm curious as to how people look at it. Right now, look at the whole four-year sample, and it's 3.5. Look at the whole thing and tell me which season doesn't belong. The other three have been pretty consistent. 93 wins, this year on pace for 88. The one in the middle there, last year, they went 108 and they rolled. Now, look, I'm not taking away the championship. Okay, I'm not taking it away. Because you can't. I mean, it's obviously we start anew every season. That's the whole trick. But if we're talking about the aggregate, the group, last year's the outlier. And the Red Sox, this is what should anger you. The Red Sox should have known this. They should have known that there was no way they were going to repeat last year. They shouldn't have come into the season without a bullpen. They shouldn't have thought that they were going to bash everyone into submission and win 105 or 102. They should have never thought that because everything prior to last season suggested the opposite. So I know there's a tendency to look at a team like last year and say, well, they broke through. I'm not really sure that they did. I mean, they hit their ceiling. But what is the likelihood that you ever have that kind of season again? The Red Sox have been in existence for what? 120 years? They had one season like that. One. And people thought it was going to happen again? Stupid. Harry in a car. Were the Red Sox a fluke last year? Fluke's too strong a word, but were they a fluke?
No, they weren't. They were the greatest team ever in Red Sox history. The record shows they did it. I used to turn on the game. I said, this is so easy. I watch all the games. They just did an incredible job. And last year, you were the same. You were bad-mouthing them all. That we knew what, but they did it. They were the greatest team. Now, over 4 years, who knows? But last year, they were great. You're talking out of both ends of your mouth there. You say over four or the greatest team. That was the greatest Red Sox team ever.
Yeah, Harry, listen, I just said that. I mean, I'm, this is not a case like 2013 where I take the 2013 season and I say that was lightning in a bottle. That was a fluke. I would never call last year's team a fluke. But given that they could play at that level, Harry, doesn't that annoy you that this year they're half-assing it the way they are?
Well, you say I don't. I know you're a Yankee fan, but
I'm not a Yankee fan.
Yeah, in my mind you are. But anyways, they are. It's not good, but it's not over. I mean, I know you're trying to stir the pot to get them going. I hope you're doing that, but it ain't over yet. That team can turn it around. They got a good manager. They have no bullpen.
Yeah, Harry. Listen, I'm not telling you the season's over. That's not what I'm telling you. I'm telling you to just look at the full body of work and tell me which of the 4 years is really the more unusual performance. And it was last year. That's all. I'm not telling you have to take it away from or anything else. It was a terrific season. I myself just said to you a second ago, it is the single greatest season in Red Sox history. I don't know if it's the most important. I would put 2004 as the most important season in Red Sox history. And frankly, if you were to ask me which team would I take head-to-head, I'd take the 04 team over this team last year. The 04 team to me would beat the 2018 Red Sox. because of what they had to carry going in, that team, 2018, could not have handled the same burden. Just look at what they did in 2016 and 2017. And again, I'm not telling you they stink or stunk. They were good. They were a good team in those years. But even then, I can look at 16 and 17 and say, well, they underachieved a little bit. I mean, they won one playoff game in 2 years with two division titles. One playoff game. This year, right now, they're out of the playoffs. So, and I am twisting the argument. There's no question I am. Part of that's my job. But if I sit here and say to you, look at the full 4 years, to use the old line, which of the seasons doesn't belong? Put the four of them out there, and which season is the outlier? And the outlier is 2018. Everything went right, and that's okay. They don't have anything to apologize for. Mookie Betts won the MVP. J.D. Martinez damn near won the Triple Crown. They had good pitching. They had a good closer and a good enough bullpen during the regular season, and then they navigated around it in the playoffs. Their lineup was killer. They were an excellent team last year. But when we are examining the whole body of work, whether it's John Farrell or Alex Cora, you've changed managers now, and they've regressed to right back where they were. I think that last year was the outlier. Last year was the unusual performance. And if this thing breaks up, we'll look at them and say, boy, they had a great year in 18. They should have been better than they were, though, in some of those other years. That's how we'll look at it. The Houston Astros, when they won it in 2017, the next year, they got back to the LCS. Maybe this team will too, but they're going to have to convince me of it now because I feel like they've regressed to right back where they were before last season. 617-779-0985. When we come back, if you have not heard some of the questions being tossed at Alex Cora during the press conference today in London, you got to hear this. Believe me, we'll play it for you when we come back.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Just to follow up on that quickly, from the European point of view, this is all new for us. And your colleague on the New York Yankees earlier was talking about the beauty of baseball. In your opinion, what is it that makes baseball beautiful, and what do you hope to show to an audience that doesn't know it?
So this is what we're getting.
These Brits are so proper.
This is what we're getting in London. The beauty of baseball. Your colleague.
Alex Dermot Crowley, BBC News. Alex, could you explain why there's a rampant tendency to see players spit during lulls in play? Furthermore, during the flu pandemic of the early 20th century, why didn't baseball ban spitting?
Like, they got to be rolling their eyes sitting there dealing with these questions, or just like how proper these Brit reporters sound. They're not used to this.
So again, the game's been around for 150 years.
Right.
150 years. They know nothing about it. And all of a sudden, Major League Baseball now has the brainstorm of going over in London and trying to convert the Brits into baseball fans.
It ain't
going to
happen. The game has been around long enough. You were saying this yesterday on the show and in Felger and Mass. Like, do they think there's just going to be like, just like that, Brits are going to love baseball? And what, next you're going to like have games in Belarus? Like, it's not going to work. They don't care.
So next year, there are actually, there's another couple.
Oh, God.
Cubs Cardinals.
Where? There?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Back in London. So, and Murray, but to your point, another member of the British media, Jimmy Stewart, this is British reporter number two.
Hi, NFL first came to London for regular season games back in 2007. Do you think baseball's maybe 12 years too late?
Yeah.
12? How about 112? Like, totally. This is what it is. The NFL went over there. They may have tapped into something. Certainly they tapped into another revenue stream, and now baseball has decided to do the same thing. As usual, too little, too late. Baseball moving too slow or too slowly. Same thing over and over again. It happens with baseball all the time.
Your game,
over and over and over again.
Your game moves at a glacial pace. Do you feel the same in trying to expand the game over here in London?
It's just, I mean, he's right. He's right to ask that.
So why are they there?
Ugh.
Right. Why are they there? I think this trip is stupid. I do.
And they don't know anything about it. That's why they're getting these goofy questions, and rightfully so.
Gillian McCutcheon here from The Guardian. Alex, could you please explain to those of us who don't understand your game, why you and your colleague, Mr. Boone, are called skippers? Does this mean you both, the both of you, are men sea craft during the games? Because up until now, we've seen no boats out on the field. They don't know what the hell any of the terms mean, anything. Like, they're going to continue to get these wacky questions over the weekend.
Oh, totally. They don't have a clue. They don't, you know, the old expression, they don't know if it's puffed or stuffed.
Yeah.
Those people over there don't know the difference between a baseball and a crumpet. They have no idea.
Crumpets go with tea.
Jimmy Stewart, we have a cut in the system. Quora on what the London series is about. Right, that's also in carts, about 10 spots down. Okay, this is Quora explaining what the London series is about. Go ahead.
Always a chance to show the world what baseball is all about, and obviously our rivalry, and having two of the best teams in baseball here is a big deal.
Oh, it's a huge deal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gigantic. Yeah, we're here to show the rest of the world what baseball's about. Four-hour games where nothing happens. You might sit in the stands and drink a beer and put your thumb up your butt to enjoy yourself during that period of time. We sing Sweet Caroline in the eighth inning, which, by the way, I think they're actually going to do in these games.
Oh, God.
These are technically Red Sox home games. So I think they're going to introduce that stupidity over there, too. And again, you either get a home run, a strikeout, or a walk. The game's now as boring as ever. So instead of actually improving the game, right, instead of focusing on that, they tried to sell the crap product to the Brits. How about improving the product, then trying to sell it? Like, how about selling it to the Americans?
Yeah, it seems ass backwards. It really does.
Because it feels like you're losing Americans, for goodness sake. Holy crap, I can't believe they're playing these games over there. Let's take a call here. Steve's in Billerica has an issue, I think, with my criticism of the Red Sox during their four-year period here. What do you get, Steve?
I wouldn't say that. That's a way, but... That's definitely not what I want to call you about. But with the two games in London, this is just started. Two games in London, it's only two games. No big deal. I've probably watched two games in London and two games in Japan at the beginning of the year with the other two teams. But it's only two games. Who cares? Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Steve, I care. I care, and I'll tell you why I care. The Red Sox have had trouble getting traction all year long. They've had trouble getting traction all year. They started out 6-13, and people like you called me up and said, well, it's because they had to open on the West Coast. The West Coast screwed them up. The time zone screwed them up. That's what you told me. Or some people told me, and I said, you're making excuses for them. Now the Red Sox have started to play better, at least they were starting to play better, before they dropped 2 out of 3 to the Blue Jays. Then the White Sox came in, they won the first couple, and the last game with the White Sox, they blew. Nonetheless, overall, over like the last 2.5 weeks, call it, they've actually played half decent. With the exception of screwing up against the Blue Jays in the last game against the White Sox. They've actually played okay. So now they have to hop on a plane. They have to fly all the way to London. 6 time zones. Not 3 like the West Coast. 6 time zones. They're going to play 2 games, turn around and come back. And I'm supposed to think they're just going to be fine when they get to Toronto on Tuesday to play the Blue Jays again? This team has been disinterested all year long. They've lacked focus all year long. And Cora was asked about the idea of the travel. Cora was asked this. Murray, tell me whether you believe his answer, okay? Here's Alex Cora when asked about the challenge of traveling 6 time zones to play 2 games and then having to fly 6 time zones back.
You know, the traveling and in the middle of the season, all this stuff, you know, the guys are going to come here and they're going to embrace it. They're going to have fun. I think the fans are going to love it. And something that probably MLB will keep bringing it here. I think it's a great idea, and the fans are going to take advantage of it.
Murray, do you think the players love it and the Cora thinks it's a great idea?
No, that's PR spin. And I would guarantee you, Maz, that both of these ball clubs were told by management or ownership, do not say anything negative about this trip. Or from Major League Baseball, you know, from Rob Manfred on down. Like, everything is just going to be a positive PR spin. Do the best that you possibly can. It's just good, good, good. Nice, nice, nice. Yay, we're happy to be here.
I mean, I guarantee you.
Does that sound like, when you listen to clips of Alex Cora on a day-to-day basis for this show, does that sound like how he normally sounds?
No.
No.
That was scripted.
Yeah. that was robotic boilerplate that he's just repeating.
I guarantee you, okay, and again, I don't have, I'm just telling you, I'm going on instinct here, okay? I covered baseball for a long time. I was around the Red Sox for a long time. I guarantee you that in the days leading up to their departure, Alex Cora said to someone off the record, I can't believe we got to go on this trip. I can't believe we've got to go on it. We're just now, you know, getting a little bit of traction. You know, the whole thing this year has been a pain in the ass. We've been spinning our wheels. We have no consistency. Now we got to get on a plane. We have to fly across the Atlantic to play two games, two home games, by the way.
Right.
The Red Sox gave up two home games. I don't know. Maybe they'll be better off because they haven't been good at Fenway Park this year. So maybe they'll be better off. But they had to give up two home games against the Yankees, the most expensive ticket on the schedule, which means you know Major League Baseball is making it worth their while. So the Red Sox had to give up those two games to go play in London? For what? In front of people who don't even know what the game is? And Cora's got to answer questions there about the beauty of baseball and tell people about how his father founded the Little League in Puerto Rico? As a caller said earlier, that's the type of stuff you do in spring training. That's what these games should have been. They should have been exhibition games in the spring. And even then, I would have hated the travel because I think it's disruptive to spring training, if you want to know the truth. I think these games are worthless. I think they are lose-lose for the Red Sox and the Yankees. In fact, you know the Yankees haven't even named a starter for Sunday?
Oh, really?
No. The Red Sox are pitching Porcello and Eduardo Rodriguez. The Yankees, I don't think, have named a starter. Murray, maybe you could double check that or someone could check that. Yeah. I don't think they've named a starter. You know why? Because they don't want to screw up their pitching. They're probably going to throw some bum out there. That's what I would do. Oh, what a waste of time these games are. Murray's got your headlines. When we come back, we're going to do something we don't usually do here on the Baseball Reporters. That's next.
The Baseball Reporters on 88.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox. The Sox come. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzara, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, welcome back to the Baseball Reporters. I was just telling Murray during the break. Jimmy Stewart, you ever see the documentary Knuckleball, the baseball documentary?
Oh, yeah, I love it. Tim Wakefield version you.
Tim Wakefield and, who was the other?
R.A. Dickey.
R.A. Dickey, that's right. Good, I couldn't remember the other half of it. I don't know why I couldn't remember that. But I was in the documentary. So I have a little bit of a soft spot for filmmakers who want to do baseball movies. Yeah, it's a noble task. It's a lot of work, a lot of people to talk to. So there's a new movie that is coming out tonight, premiering tonight at the Kendall Square Cinema, called The Spy Behind Home Plate. Murray, you ever hear the story of Mo Berg?
No.
Mo Berg is The Catcher Was a Spy. There's also a book out there, I think, called The Catcher Was a Spy about Mo Berg, who played for, I think, five major league teams, including the Red Sox, by the way, and then a spy in World War II. It's actually a pretty interesting story. The documentary premieres tonight at the Kendall Square Cinema. And joining us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline is Aviva Kempner. She is the director of the film. So tell us how this idea came about, Aviva.
Well, I'm a big baseball fan. I grew up in Detroit. My father brought us up as a baseball fan. So years ago, I made The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg, which, by the way, has in the bonus features my phone interview with Ted Williams before he was frozen. I mean, he and Hank were really great friends. So someone who loved that film knew that I loved doing baseball films, and especially underknown Jewish heroes, and he offered me the opportunity to make the film on Mo Berg, and I just grabbed it. I think it's one of the most fascinating stories because here you have the brainiest man in baseball ever, brilliant. And he was 5 years with the Red Sox, then 2 years as a coach. And World War II happened. you know, the attack on Pearl Harbor, and he, like many others, including his brother, decided to serve, but in a different kind of way. He was already older. He was the nuclear spy for the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, and he's the one that was seeking out if the Germans knew how to do, you know, had the nuclear capability. So, and Jewish Heritage Day, which was recently in Boston, I was there in the dugout before in the pregame, and it was so thrilling to me because I'm sitting there in the dugout and thinking, oh, my God, this is where Mo had sat. And I'm a big Boston Red Sox fan. Now that I live in Washington, D.C., and the Nats are a national team, I can say the Red Sox are my American League team. But I feel bad I'm not going to be able to see a game because you all are going to London.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's a different story. You don't want to get us rolling on that one. Honestly, I think it's a crazy decision that they've traveled there. But how was the idea of this movie? How did it come about? Did someone approach you with it, or did you know the story?
Yes, no, this gentleman, William. Oh, no, I knew the story because once you do a film on Hank Greenberg, you know, the other old time, Golden Age of Baseball is my favorite time. You know, those were the daytime games, no interleague play, you know, whoever won the pennant, they went to the World Series. I think a pure baseball and some interesting, wonderful characters. So once I did Hank Greenberg, I had known about Mo Berg. And luckily, this Phoenix businessman said, hey, will you want to make a film on Mo Berg? And I said, oh, yes, of course. And also as a child of a Holocaust survivor, I'm always wanting to make films of anything that where we defeat the Nazis.
Okay, so I know that you interviewed a lot of interesting people for the film. And again, for those who don't know, it's a documentary. So you spoke with family members. You also spoke with Brad Ausmus. Is that correct?
Yes. So I wanted to get someone who's a catcher. And at one point, I approached Joe Torre. It didn't work out. And then I thought, whoa, Brad Ausmus is perfect. He's a catcher. He went to an Ivy League school. Mo went to Princeton. Brad went to Dartmouth. And he's Jewish. And he gave me a really good perspective on what it means to be a catcher. In a way, it's almost like being a spy with the secret signals and knowing everything that's happening. But I have to say, in all fairness, I was very lucky. 30 years ago, people were making a film about Mo Berg, and it never happened. But they were able to interview people he played with and spied with, including Dom DiMaggio and William Colby. They never made the film, but I got copies of those interviews. And those interviews are in the film, intertwined with the interviews I did, including with Bud Selig, our former, baseball commissioner.
Sure. Yeah, and less work for you, right? That's never a bad thing. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so Aviva, I don't want to spoil the movie, but I'm curious, like, what made Mo Berg such a good candidate for the OSS to select him to be a spy?
Well, first of all, he's very smart. So he could pick up, especially if you're the nuclear spy, he could pick up, even though he wasn't a scientist per se, he could pick up the kind of things you need to know if you're going to develop the bomb. Second of all, he knew maybe up to 10 languages. And if you're operating in Europe, and also he had been in Japan with the All-Star team in 34, so he had those skills. And he was just very sophisticated and smart, and as a baseball player, very brawny. But you have to understand, it was also very dangerous. Because he was high profile, he was American, and as a Jewish male, you know, it was extra dangerous that he was a spy. And that's part of the reason that we're, so grateful to him, because back then we were very worried. We wouldn't be talking if the Germans had developed a nuclear bomb before we did, or at all.
Yeah, so, Aviva, we only have a couple of more seconds here before we let you go. I know, again, the film is preparing in Boston tonight at the Kendall at the Kendall Square Cinema. Has it premiered in other cities yet?
I'm all over the country. Every weekend I go to different places. And would you believe I'm sitting here in San Diego, and I will be at 7 o'clock to do Q&A after the 7 o'clock at Kendall Square tomorrow night. And I'll do two intros and Q&As in Boston on Sunday. The only sad thing is there's no game for me to go see, but I'll watch it, of course.
Well, I think you're going to need plenty of rest anyway with that schedule. So listen, thank you for your time. Good luck with the film. And again, you'll be in Boston tomorrow after the 7 o'clock show at the Kendall Square Cinema.
And also, too, on Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
And you know what my dream is? My dream is that the Red Sox face the Nationals. in the World Series. I know it's a dream, but you never know. Miracles do happen.
Yeah, so Aviva, at this stage, I'll take it as a good sign if the Red Sox face anybody in the World Series, because I'm not convinced that they're going to get there.
Well, they looked pretty good the night I was there.
Yeah, they haven't looked good every other night, though, just about. So, listen, we're going to let you go, but thank you very much for your time, and have a safe trip.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, again, Aviva Kempner, she's the director of the film The Catcher Behind Home Plate, which is the Moberg story. Again, The Catcher was a spy, if you're familiar with the book.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.